It's time to light up a cigar and talk about business and cars. Are you ready to get the insider edge and pick up a few ideas that you can incorporate into your business today? Your host, Brandon Green, has 25 plus years in the automotive industry, with 10 plus years owning his own business. Together with a diverse lineup of guests from all industries, he's asking the right questions to get you the answers you seek.
I noticed one thing here. Page was created on June 30th of 2015. So you started building this brand ahead of time.
Yep.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
So, I had the foresight and the thought in my mind that I wanted to build my brand and build my company. And just kind of like we always talk about, they're just like me coming down to visit the family. There never seemed to be like a good time. And it could be stupid stuff where it's busy at work, or the schedule's booked up, or it's a blackout zone, or, you know, like, oh, it's not a good time to move down to Naples right now because of X, Y, and Z, you know, or I want to refinish the bathroom in my house so I can get the most out of my house when I go to sell it. You know, you'll find an excuse to not do it. And I finally got to the point where I'm like, you know, I just got to make that leap. I just got to do it. Like, I got to stop thinking about it, stop talking about it, and just go for it. And it's always one of those things. It's hindsight. It's 2020. You know, you can't live in the past on it. But, you know, having now done it, it's one of those things like, oh man, I wish I would have done this 10 years ago. You know, luckily I'm in a position where, you know, I don't have a wife or kids or responsibilities, you know, so I'm married to my shop, you know, and I'm married to my business in a good way. You know, obviously we talk a lot about running the business versus the business running you.
Yeah.
And, you know, that takes some time and strategic initiatives to kind of work out and not get caught up in that. You know, do I have much of a life outside of Divine Concepts? Not really. And I knew it was going to be that way. Like,
but for a few
years,
what
to put in.
Yeah, for a few years, it's that way.
Yeah,
you gotta put everything into it.
And three to five is what I'd presume. You know, you gotta kind of go BTW, just balls to the wall, and you know, hit it as hard as you can, because you're only gonna get out what you put in. And if you think that a cool social media platform and some advertising and some Facebook or Instagram ads is gonna get your phone ringing off the hook and people beating down your front door and walk-ins coming through, it just doesn't happen that way. You know, like a lot of our demographic and our brand, we were known more nationally than we were locally when we started, you know, just from the groups that we interact with in the 12 volt community. They kind of knew who we were by what we were posting and content wise, but our local demographic had no idea who the hell we were. You know, the old school boost to the ground, getting out there with flyers and business cards and going in, you know, stopping into barbershops and, you know, pawnbrokers or college campuses, or Christ, I even went to apartment complexes that had free, you know, cork boards that, you know, you could put business cards on or flyers. Like,
been there,
done
that.
You gotta get out there and brand yourself. And you can't do it for a week. You can't do it for a month and think that, you know, it's just gonna all of a sudden explode. You've gotta keep putting it out there. And we did a lot of shows in the beginning. We did, you know, shows at college campuses. We've done like little parking lot shows. We've done cars and coffee events. We've been title sponsors to big events. We've volunteered and donated our time to local community charity events, like everything that we could possibly do to get our brand and our name out there in the community is something that we strived for. And now you have so much more at your fingertips than in years past, where you can look at Google My Business or Google Analytics and monitor the traffic that's going to your website, or what keywords that you're showing up in that are driving traffic to your location, or, You know, did they find your shop based on a organic search because they were just searching for car audio or remote start install, or did they actually search for the car audio shop or Divine Concepts by name?
Yep.
And following Google My Business and looking at those results, I know that, you know, out of the past 30 days, we've shown up in 9,500 or 12,000 results, and that 45% of those typed in our name into the search bar. You know, they didn't search for car audio installer or, you know, remote start install near me. You know, they searched for our brand. And that helps you gauge how you're doing in your demographic on establishing your brand and being that brand that people think about locally when they think about your business.
So what I was thinking here with this is you really started this 3 years before you opened. I mean, you were starting to build this brand. You were starting to get out there. You were pushing this, maybe not so much at car shows. I know you do a lot of car shows and cars and coffee and different things nowadays, and have been, and we do the same thing here. But yeah, just that foresight is something to think about for, you know, for everybody listening, is if you're thinking about getting into this, or if, you know, you're a business owner now or whatever, and you're trying to figure out how to grow, well, man, jump in, fucking start putting shit out there. You know, what's the worst that's going to happen? Somebody's going to be like, ah, what the fuck are you doing? Eh, fuck them off. You know,
put it out there. The way my folks always taught me is nothing ventured, nothing gained. So realistically, if you're not doing it, don't expect any type of results. So yeah, for those 3 years,
do the work.
I'm putting together a business plan. You know, so that's something I talk about in my business owner clash that I teach at Knowledge Fest.
Everybody should get to Knowledge Fest if you're in the 12-volt industry, and you should take Adam's class. There we go.
There you go. It's insightful because I've been in each one of those positions. I've been the sales pro. I've been the owner. I've been the installer, the fabricator, you know. So as a business owner manager class, it kind of helps break down those fences in between those positions and how to help, you know, guide their team to be a little bit more uniform versus just centric on their sole position. And how you can kind of incorporate and entwine the two to make that operation a little bit smoother. But yeah, for 3 years, I was crunching the numbers and creating a business plan, a 30, 60, 90, which is like almost a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year at that time, on how am I going to get there? What's the good old additive? You don't fail to plan, you plan to fail.
If you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
There you go. Long weekend.
Something like that.
You guys understand what the hell I'm talking about. You know, it's absolutely wholeheartedly true. You know, that I always remember the 7 P's, you know, prior preparation prevents piss poor performance positively. And it's true. Like, if you don't have a game plan in place, and I don't care if it's business or sales or install or fabrication, can you get from point A to point B or A to Z? Absolutely. But if you have a plan in place, are you going to be more efficient in doing it? Wholeheartedly. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So let's put the extra time in and the due diligence in, get to where you aspire to be at a faster pace. And that's possible if you have a good plan in place. And, you know, just because you wrote the plan doesn't mean you're going to not adapt and make changes and change things along the way. You have to. But having that foundation or plan makes the process much easier. I think I can say, as a more novice fabricator in our industry, that, you know, I can't go into every build, you know, like a chess match and think 30 steps ahead. You know, sometimes we have to get in there, and after staring at it for hours, we've got an idea. But if you have it all laid out and a plan on your layers and how you're going to gap your materials and everything else, obviously you're going to get your end result way faster, way more efficient, less resources, less time, less wasted energy. But sometimes, sometimes you got to cowboy it up and just kind of go in there and start doing something, because there are sometimes it's just like writer's block. You know, you get out there in front of a part of a vehicle and you're like, where the hell do I start? You look at it, it's a blank canvas, it's an empty slate, but you know, you've you get to a point where like, all right, well, I can't stare at this thing any longer. Let me just start doing something.
I've had that a couple times, man. If I can't see it in my head, I'm fucked. I mean, literally, yeah. I have to, as long as I can see it and see what I have to build, I can make it happen. I can take that and reverse engineer it in my head. Like, okay, I need to do this, this, and this, and I'll make it happen. If I cannot see the end result, and this is just me, and maybe some other guys are like this too, but if I can't see that end result where I need to be, and I think this goes with a whole lot of other things, but as far as, you know, fabrication and building something, then I can't do it. If I can see it, it doesn't matter what the fuck it is. I'll build it.
Yep.
I can make that happen. But
yep, yeah, I agree.
Go ahead.
I agree. No, I was going to say, I agree with you. You know, like, I'm probably not the number one master craftsman out there, but I am so OCD that, and I've had this joke with you that I called CDO and actually put it in alphabetical order. You know, I may not know how the hell to do it, but my OCD won't let me stop until it looks the way it does in my head.
Yep.
So maybe I don't know all the processes and procedures how to get from A to Z, and it's going to take me longer. But is it going to be quality when it's done? Absolutely, because I won't let anything leave the door that is subpar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's got to be what you expect and what you want. And you need, that's what you want from premier technicians, from you guys as well. You want it to be, you know, at the same bar that you would expect, you know, you to do every single time. Oh,
absolutely. And you got to lead by example on that accord as well. You know, like, I would never ask any of my people to do anything that I'm not physically willing to get in there and do myself.
Including clean the toilet, take out the trash. You know what?
Yep.
Sweep the floor.
I still did. Yep. When I had my apprentice here, you know, he was, you know, like, everybody would say, you know, he would be the guy who starts and cleaning the bay and putting stuff away. And, you know, like, I'm not once did he ever have to clean the bathroom. You know, I'm still in there, gloves on, elbows deep with a toilet brush, you know, and I'm not above doing anything.
And I agree with that 100%. I'm not above it. I am also at this point, and give me your thoughts on this, but you know what? I'm trying to achieve a lot more. So I'm trying to be at a place where the time I'm spending into getting clients into the shop, you know, setting up the shop, doing the other things I want to do, doing this podcast, for example, you know, all the other things I want to do that I think will not only benefit, you know, the shop, but also, you know, benefit everybody. I need to be able to expect that that will get taken care of. And if it's not, then that's an issue. But beyond that, to go back, it seems like I bring Thomas up every time in my fucking podcast right now, because he's a huge influence on me. But anyway, in his book, you know, the $10, $100, $1,000, $10,000 tasks, you know, I don't need to be doing the $10 tasks or $100 tasks or whatever. You know, I need to be focusing on the $1,000 $10,000 tasks, the things that make the business better over time. And so I'll still do it if I'm there and it needs to be done. But at the same time, I'm also perfectly okay. I am the guy that will literally, I'll see a piece of trash on the floor. I'll see it. I'll walk by it. And this goes against some other people I listen to and watch. Hey, Andy Frisella, for example, if he sees a piece of trash on the floor, piss stains on the toilet or whatever, he wipes it up. You know, I listen to all those guys. But you know what? I'll check it. I'll leave it. I'll be like, okay, I got shit to do. I want to see if they take care of it. Because if they're not, then I'm screwing. Here's the way I think about it is if they're not doing it, then I'm screwing something up and I should change the way I'm working on that to make sure that that is getting taken care of. So I do it on occasion just to see if it's taken care of, not to be an asshole or not to be lazy or anything like that. But I want to leave it and watch and see if that's still there tomorrow or if that's still there. You know, does that make sense?
No, and it's a testament to you landing your expectations with your team. So, like, if you see that piece of, you know, paper towel or whatever the case may be, or a bunch of template tape hanging on the ground, and, you know, you walk over it, you know, just to see which employee is going to clean it up, you know, and care, you know, that you landed those expectations of clean and bright inside your shop. You know, and if maybe a day goes by and nobody picks it up throughout the whole team, well, then great. Now you have an area that you need to know you as an owner need to revisit.
Yeah.
As far as expectations going forward on what clean and bright the shop should look like. And it's not just like you said, it's not to be a dick, but you're kind of checking yourself, not checking them. You are checking them, but you're checking yourself on whether or not you've landed that expectation and message with your team to not walk over it.
Yeah. And that's kind of the way I look at that. I know some people look at it as like, well, you're there. Why don't you just fucking pick it up? Well, kind of trying something else, you know, different here. So I don't know. Well, and that's gone back and forth. Honestly, it's my guys. I mean, it's gone up and down. And quite frankly, I get it. You know, I don't expect anybody around here to care about this place as much as I do. I know how that works, you know, and I'm sure you're the same way.
Sure.
You know, I would love for him to, but that's the difference between being owner and not, and, you know, this being us. But that's one thing, keeping those expectations and keeping everything up. And it's okay, I think, to have those standards and put them to the test every once in a while, you know.
Absolutely.
Making sure that, hey, guys, you know, we need to make sure this is done. This wasn't done. I checked. You know, there's the employee bathroom over there is still nasty or whatever. You know what? If I got to go in there, I want to be nice too. Just like, and whether it's a client bathroom or anything else, you know, it needs to be taken care of. Just an example of something I've dealt with. And they do a decent job, but especially right now, you know, being so busy with remote starts and being busy with clients and coming in right before, you know, right before Christmas and everything else. I think some of that gets lost, and keeping those standards up, especially during the tough times, is key. You know, you have to make sure that this stuff's done, make sure, because then when it's nice and easy, it's nice and easy. But if it ain't being taken care of when it's the tough times, whether it's checking in a vehicle correctly or, you know, making sure clients are taken care of correctly or whatever it may be, then if it can't be done the tough times, then, you know, what are you doing? I mean, yeah, sometimes they can handle it during the easy times, but we don't want sometimes. That's not the business model you and I and a lot of others in this industry do. And so we got to keep up on that. So sorry, I'm rambling a little bit. I get off on that, but you know what I mean.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's you've got to land that expectation and land it with your team to a point where it's not just an expectation, it becomes muscle memory, you know, to the point where they're not going to walk over it or past it no matter how busy they are, because they know what the standards are, what you expect, what the clients deserve to see. And, you know, no matter how busy they are running from point A to point B, if they see something that's not right, they'll grab it and stuff it in their pocket for 2 seconds till they can hit a trash can and throw it away. You know, there's always going to be there's not enough hours in the day excuse. And I'm victim of giving that excuse myself. You know, it's hard, but you just have to get better at your time management then, you know, and carve out said time to make it happen. And that's where you're going to see your brand or your business explode past even what you set for yourself when you get into that rhythm. And it's not easy to do, and it's tiresome, and it's going to take a lot out of you.
And not only holding them accountable for what you expect, but also holding yourself accountable for what you expect. Mm-hmm. And I'll be the first person to say that I have gotten off that from time to time, you know, like, you know, hey, I want this done. I need this done. I need this done. And I've been the person I've fallen short sometimes, you know, it happens. And I mean, not a single one of us are perfect, which sucks, but we're figuring it the fuck out. Right. But, but yeah, man, I mean, it's
you gotta be your biggest critic. You know, you gotta hold yourself to a higher standard than you hold your team to. And if you're not doing that, and getting outside of that comfort zone and trying to build and trying to grow and trying to expand, then you're just going to become stagnant, and or complacent. You know, that's another thing that goes right back to the training that I do at K-Fest. You know, the two main things that I think of when I think of our industry, or the two key words that come to mind for me, is complacency and insanity. You know, complacency is, you know, happens from all areas, from the ownership to the installer to the sales guys. You know, you get into what's comfortable and what's easy. And you basically, when you get into what's comfortable and what's easy, you fall back on that. You're used to that all the time. And you make that your go-to. instead of what you should be doing. And then insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a result, which, you know, we all fall victim to that too. You know, if you think that your brand or your business or any of that is going to change without you personally making those changes, then, you know, that's the definition of insanity. You know, you're doing the same thing day in and day out, but expecting growth either at a rapid or exponential rate or a rate time over time. But even that is not going to happen unless you're getting outside your comfort zone and have that strategic plan in place and have a goal set on how you're going to move forward and achieve that next stepping stone or mile marker in your business or in your team or your sales guys or your technicians or opening a second location or branch. You know, you have to have the foresight for all of that and be able to juggle it going forward. If you really want to break through that, Chris Cook actually gave an example of that in his class. A lot of shops get stuck in that, you know, $300,000 to $500,000 a year, you know, revenue and can't break through that glass ceiling and kind of aspire into that next level. And it's going to take some forward thinking and it's going to take some thinking outside the box to make that happen. And you got to put in that time. And once you do, it's extremely rewarding.
Oh, absolutely. So you've went from one, I'm just going to blatantly change subjects here for a second. You've went from one, what's the words I'm thinking of? Shop car, display car, and went off and did another one, got rid of the first one and went, did the other one. So beans, we've talked to quite a bit of business and different things. Let's talk ours for a minute.
Yeah. So, we had originally when I first moved back down, I had a Jeep, Patriot and, you know, it had a decent little setup in it. Nothing crazy. It was just my daily drive and, you know, I had really no miles on it just because the same thing. I lived and worked relatively close to where I lived, so I didn't put a whole lot of miles on it. But down here in Southwest Florida, no matter what cool things I would do to that Jeep, people wouldn't see the value. And I knew that, you know, whether it's upholstery, interior, audio, whatever the case may be, nobody's going to see the value in it. They can't relate.
Yep.
So Mercedes is literally the Honda Civic or Toyota Camry of Southwest Florida. A Mercedes in other parts of the country is looked at as a luxury vehicle or, you know, a high-end vehicle. Down here, it's your normal everyday, like the roads are swamped with them. Every make and model Mercedes you can think of.
Yeah.
And BMW is out on the road. Those are your entry level cars. I mean, Christ, you got parents buying, you know, C-class and E-class for the kid that's in high school. It's just the way it is down here. So for me, I got the GLC just because it was something that if I made modifications to, it was something that my demographic could relate to and see the value in it. And whether it's a luxury car or an exotic, a lot of exotic owners still have a luxury vehicle as their daily drive. They're not driving their 458 or their Aventador, you know, or the Huracan every day. They're driving the Mercedes or the BMW or the Maserati or exactly, you know, whatever things they have left in their stable of nine cars, because they all seem to have four or five or six. So, you know, after getting the Mercedes and we did radar laser setup in it, some ambient lighting, and a few other tweaks and mods, there really wasn't much for me to play with and much more I could really do with it. And there becomes a point of diminishing returns, just like anything else. And I knew that I had to get rid of it. It wasn't an AMG. It wasn't a 4MATIC. So I knew that the price on it or its value was going to drop like a stone over the next 3 or 4 years because of the saturation in the market down here with them. So I got rid of it and I was going to grab a new C8. And, you know, they wanted $40,000 over sticker for the new C8. And I don't mind, you know, tossing a little bit of coin out there to get something I want, you know, if it was $4,000 over or $5,000 over. you know, I could see eating that and tossing it away to get what we want now.
Right.
By 40? No. Yeah. Once manufacturing and production gets back to the way it goes, you know, that equity or that money that you put in is just might as well just throw it in the dumpster and lit it on fire because you're never going to get it back. Nobody's ever going to pay you anything close to what you paid for that vehicle. So that's when I started looking at the Porsche and then found a Cayman actually out in Chicago, and it only had like 34,000 miles on it. And, you know, I didn't get to see the car. I just bought it and put it in an enclosed trailer and had it shipped down and you know, got burned a little bit. I mean, the interior had the common early Porsche issues with your adhesives, and it's a 981. And so, like, the headliner was starting to sag and the door panels were starting to delaminate. And
yeah,
none of that stuff was disclosed. And, you know, they tried to hide it and fix it. And they actually ended up destroying the panels from trying to hide it. Had they just left it alone, I probably could have repaired them. So right after getting the car, there's no way that I could comfortably sit in that car and look at this drooping headliner and these door panels that are curling up after spending this money for this vehicle. So I wasn't in the car to change it out real quick, but I went ahead and changed out the whole interior on the car. Because if I'm going to do it, go big or go home, do it all or do none of it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
We put a full interior from a 2016 Porsche GT4 in there. So it's all got the contrasted stitch and Alcantara headliner, Alcantara A panels or A pillars, door insert card, center console, glove box, knee bolster. Now the car has sports chrono where it didn't have it before. So we're adding value to the car, even though it's OEM materials, because a lot of Porsche enthusiasts really don't like a whole lot of aftermarket stuff.
Right.
So I've been very strategic on what I add to the car and then making sure that it's either reversible or it's not a permanent modification. So the interior obviously added value to the car. It's all OEM manufactured materials. So enthusiasts will see the value in that. Like a lot of Porsche enthusiasts, you know, really don't care about audio quality. Some do, you know, but a lot of them want to hear the sound of that flat six, you know, which now is a turbo four, but, you know,
yep.
They want to hear the motor. They don't care about the audio. And it's slowly changing as some of those factory Bose systems are dying out, and I'm seeing them come over, but they don't want the aesthetic change of the car. You know, they don't want an aftermarket head unit. And companies out there that offer CarPlay integration modules is something that we've attacked and hopped on board with, because a lot of the cars down here and a lot of the clientele down here are seasonal as well. So they may have, you know, a 2010 or 2012, you know, whatever, Porsche, BMW, Mercedes, whatever the case may be, Lexus. And the thing probably only has 18,000 or 22,000 miles on it because they're here 3 months out of the year.
Yep.
And they love the car. There's nothing wrong with the car. It just now they've become accustomed to having their Apple CarPlay or their Android Auto or navigation, you know, and they don't know that can be changed in their vehicle and aesthetically nothing looks different. So, you know, that's one thing I did right out the gate on the Cayman was add the ZZ2 CarPlay interface module. So I have wireless Apple CarPlay. It's the factory screen. I added a front camera and a backup camera, which is big down here with clientele because a lot of sports cars end up ripping their front clip off from running over parking stones and stuff of that nature. So a lot of these folks would daily drive these cars a little bit more if they knew that they could make those modifications and have those luxuries that they have in, let's say, their newer vehicle and their more classic vehicle.
Yeah. And we've seen that a lot of, up here as well. I mean, they want, you know, front cameras and some of that, make sure they're not hitting that lip on the, you know, the curb or whatever comes up. And of course, radar and some of that. Yeah, just I want to jump into one more. I know we're pushing a couple hours. This is probably going to turn into two episodes, which is cool. I love it.
Yep.
But you just finished a badass. I'm sitting here looking at it. 55 Chevy wagon, and did a center console. You did a few things with it. So, you know, with as far as going back to the cars thing and whatever, I mean, obviously the exotics are cool, but I'm kind of in the hot rods and some of that stuff as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that if you don't care?
Yeah. So, really, really cool client. There is a classic hot rod museum, out in Naples that has, I think he said it's almost $500 million worth of cars in there, to the point where the owner of the museum, it's ungodly the cost of some of these vehicles that are in there. A lot of them are one-offs or serial number one. I mean, it's an eclectic collection. Think of almost like Jay Leno scale. So the gentleman with the 55 wagon is actually a volunteer curator for that museum. And, you know, he came in at a busy time where we were booked out a month and a half, 2 months, and, you know, wanted a custom center console and wanted the back area, you know, the lift gate cleaned up a little bit because somebody had just kind of panel mounted or surface mounted a couple 6x9s. And he didn't care to, it wasn't a show car to him. He didn't care about doing anything extremely fancy. But me, on the other hand, I can't touch a car like that and just do something, you know,
yep,
cheap and easy. So even though it wasn't in the cards for him, and in part of his budget, we probably donated 30 hours worth of labor into the build just to do something really fun and really cool. And, you know, that all kind of ties back to your business and your demographic. Like, instead of me paying a couple $100 and throwing up Facebook marketing ads and Instagram ads or YouTube, you know, commercials or whatever the case may be, I'd rather donate labor and time into a client's vehicle that's really enthusiastic, like this gentleman is.
Absolutely.
That's going to be around the scene and around the clientele that we want to acquire. So it was a no-brainer. And, you know, he needed it done before a certain car show. And there was just, it was a tough ask. And I had no open appointments before it. So I basically ended up telling him, I'll take it on, but we're going to have to do it after hours and on Sundays when we're closed. That's the only time I really have. I said, other than that, we're at the time when he came to me in November, we were already booked to almost the end of December, and he needed it by like the first week of December. So yeah, we got the console done for him, but we had to revisit the tailgate and back. And, you know, even still, there's, it's just like any artist almost, you know, like our the cars that we work on are our blank canvas. You're never kind of really done. It's hard to stop finicking with things and be done with it. Like, we laser engraved and did, you know, polished piano black acrylic up the front, and then did like a painting inlay for it for the Chevy symbol, and just kind of did an outer ring around the cup holders and USB. But I'm my worst critic, you know, like, I really am concerned about the paint and how it's laid up and cleared over and the longevity of it, that I already told him, well, I don't need the car back. You know, I've already ordered in different acrylic that maybe I could laser etch and two-tone the acrylic, but still have piano black finish without having to put paint on there to make that contrast really pop and stand out. So that way, if he wants to clean it and polish it, he doesn't have to be super delicate to the point where is it going to smear or come off or streak or, you know, sure, not look right.
Yep.
And he's like, I don't really drive the car that much. He's like, I'll hit it with a light microfiber or a California duster. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You can still do all that stuff, but I'm still ordering the acrylic. And I'm still going to cut new panels for it, whether you tell me no or not. You know, it's just who I am and what we do. Like, if it leaves out the door and I think of something else that would make it just that step better, and it's a little bit of time and just a small cost of materials, absolutely, we're going to do that.
I think this is, and this is one thing, I agree with you 100% on that, because I do the same thing. But when you get something to a point where you know the client is going to be extremely happy and taken care of, and they're going to be okay with that, this whole 80-20 rule as far as taking care of clients, you know, they're cool with it. They're happy with it. I've learned, and I don't know. Please don't take this wrong. I'm not trying to jump in here or anything, but you know what? I've learned that, hey, you know, they're cool with it. Let's roll with it the way it is. And if that time comes later, then I deal with it.
Sure.
You know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it goes to the back to the point of diminishing returns. There's nothing that you're going to do above and beyond what you're doing right now, where it's going to substantiate the additional time and labor that you put into it. You know, we talk about this a lot when we talk about tuning a vehicle. In the time frame allotted, you could do an excellent tune on a vehicle, and acoustically, you know, it's going to sound phenomenal. Exactly. And could you put in two more hours and make it sound a little bit better? Sure. But are they going to hear the difference on what those extra 2 hours you put in? Or are their ears not trained to the point where they would notice the difference at all? So there has to become a point of diminishing returns where you say, all right, this is our stopping point. Like, I know that it's acoustically sound, it's time aligned, it's phased correctly, there's no all pass filters, we got no crazy null in the middle of the cabin or anything to that nature.
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes I find myself over-tuning things based on, like, just my ears looking for that reference that I know, but the limitation is not on the tune, the limitation is on the equipment, you know. So I'm trying to get, you know,
and on us, I mean, let's be honest,
yeah, we're trying to
do so much more than, you know what, yeah, what the client expects, which, I mean, trust me, I'm 100% with above and beyond. But at the same time, it comes to a point where it can be, you know, too much above and beyond, you know, or, yep, you know, it's costly for the company as opposed to beneficial for the company. So, you know, like, yep, you were saying, I mean, we get to the point where it's too much. But anyway, yes, please.
No, you're dead right and dead on. Like, there's little things that you can always do. And it goes back to, you know, branding yourself and doing those couple little extra things and putting your logo in there on your build, or kind of branding your work, you know, so that way it leaves. It's no different than an artist signing their name at the corner of their painting. You know, you,
yep,
need to make sure that you're branding the work that goes out your door. You know, now it doesn't have to be, you know, obviously if a client's spending good money and, you know, they want it to just look all OEM and factory, then you could do something as small as like what we do on the radar and lasers, where it's like a door card that goes right inside where the VIN sticker is, you know, and, you know, designed by Divine Concepts and their materials, or the models of the product or serial numbers or something of that nature, you know, built and designed for by, you know,
which I love those, by the way. I just got my laser. Trust me, that's going to be something that's going to be happening. So I love those. I've seen you and Matt and several of the guys do those, and I think that's just badass.
And it doesn't take a whole lot of time. It doesn't take a whole lot of materials, but it wows them. It's that personalized touch that you can do that nobody else can.
Exactly.
And that's those little things, you know, like, it's crazy. Like, you could spend, you know, 7 hours doing some crazy perspex pods for these jammers, you know, but they're floored by the, you know, 30-second laser cut door tag more than they are on the 6 to 7 hour, you know, custom polished perspex pod that blends into their front bumper. You know, you never know what is gonna, you know, yep, ring somebody's bell. And those door cards for us were something kind of quick, simplistic, but, you know, it's non-negotiable and it brands us. But the other big thing is we did it because when we go to update the firmware on the unit, if they don't have the serial numbers, we can't update it. You know, so, yeah, if I had printed you out a wallet card and said, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Customer, hang on to this, we need this, it's getting thrown away, or it's getting lost, or it's going to go back behind the glove box.
Yeah, at best, you're going to have to dig for it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you digging for it is going to cost you time, money, warranty work, labor, you know, all that stuff versus, you know, every client we offer free lifetime updates on all their firmware. So they don't have to do, you know, pop in every 4 to 6 months, whatever. And we'll update the firmware, make sure that you have the latest firmware and that you're up to date. And I don't have to dig or hunt for anything. I can just go look right inside their door sill, get their serial numbers, pop them into the computer, download it to a flash drive, flash it, bam, they're in and out in 10 minutes and they're protected, you know, and it just makes it simple and efficient and it's aesthetically pleasing. And it's just a nice kind of little concierge step.
Yeah. I love it, man. I love those things. That's one thing I, with the laser, I'm literally looking at everything and be like, you know what? I want personalized touch. I want that something we can do. And looking, I ain't gonna lie, I'm looking at some ideas to, you know, hey, we did this, this, and this, and have it, you know, right there, or have a way to change it or set it up or do something different. But well, we're pushing. I mean, go ahead.
I was gonna say the laser definitely affords you a lot of opportunities to kind of make some really unique stuff out there. And I think it's cool that, you know, there's a lot more guys in our industry that have them now. When I first grabbed mine like 3 years ago, I'm looking at YouTube videos of this girl called Laser Lady that's making, you know, little poplar wood earrings to put on her Etsy shop, you know, just to figure out how she draws certain things and then adapt it to our industry because nobody else was really doing anything. You know, there was nobody to go to for guidance. There was a couple people in our industry that had one, like Carlos and Ada. They both had the same machine that I got. John Brettel and McNulty still hadn't even picked up their machine yet. They were looking at buying a Glowforge at the time. And same thing with Marks, you know, like, you know, and not that there's anything wrong with the Glowforge. I try to steer everybody into the bigger machine because I said you're gonna outgrow it. But watching what just Marks and Brettel and McNulty did with that Glowforge, they made that little tiny machine their bitch. They pumped out some amazing builds on a really small platform.
And I ain't gonna lie, I'm gonna say. The reason I didn't buy one till now, I was like, okay, you know what? I want to wait and I want to buy one that's, you know, I'm not going to outgrow. It will be beneficial for as long as I have it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But same time, I think 100% transparency. I think I probably should have just went ahead and done it, you know, like at least get started and at least get going. Cause now I got a learning curve that I have to, you know, catch up on a little bit. And so, you know, I don't know what everybody's got, but, the one we just got, I'm really happy with. I think it will be fabulous for us for years and years to come. But at the same time, you know, and I've told numerous people this. Yeah, I didn't want to buy one until I could buy the big one, blah, blah, blah. You know, I wanted to make sure we had. Well, you know what? I'll be the first person to say I may have been wrong on that. You know, maybe I should have jumped in and learned some of this a little bit quicker because now I got a learning curve that I got to speed up on, which is fine. I'll make that happen. But, you know, now I got to figure it out. You know, now you guys are off doing 3D and other shit and I got to figure that out too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's the nice part is, you know, we network with inside our industry a lot. I mean, me and you talk a lot. I talked to Milton up at Speed of Sound. I talked to Dalton Trainer a lot. I talked to John Brettel. I talked to McNulty. I talked to guys over on the West Coast. You know, we have a big industry, but a tight-knit community of individuals inside our industry that really do an excellent job in terms of networking and sharing ideas and growth and, you know, what's working well for us or working down here. And realistically, you're either retail and local driven or you're industry driven.
Yeah.
And a lot of those shops that are performing really well and are having exponential growth are those guys that who are industry driven. And I say that being one of them as because if I can make everybody else around us aspire and grow to the level that we care about, it benefits the industry as a whole to get the mentality away from consumers of, oh, well, you know, a car audio shop just makes cars loud and obnoxious and rattle and, you know, booming system and annoying kids. And like, that's why I've already looked at rebranding our logo and taking the speaker out of it, just because there's so much more we do above and beyond just audio now that, you know, I don't want to give our clientele the misconception by just looking at the logo that all we do is audio. And a lot of clients don't know our industry that well. They don't know that you can get parking sensors at an audio shop. They would think that they would have to go to the mechanic or, you know, an auto body shop or something of that nature. They don't know that that's part of our industry, that that's part of our arsenal or repertoire, you know, that they just think that, you know, oh, it's a car shop or a car audio shop. So they probably just do audio. You know, and then even crap, we still have the speaker on our logo, and I still get people who call and ask, do we do speaker installs and audio? Not to say that you have to dumb it down, but there was a meme that I shared on Facebook the other day that said, you know, if you think that you're smarter than the generation before you, you know, 40 years ago, they showed you in the owner's manual how to adjust valve timing. Now the owner's manual tells you not to drink the battery liquid. You know, so yes and no to maybe the newer generation needs a little bit more guidance in which direction to go and a little bit more transparency on what we do versus the older demographic, which we cater to them a lot down here. Most of our clientele is 30 plus.
Well, I went through, God, I couldn't tell you how many names. I have several notebook pages full of names that when we were first starting out, and I was like, you know, what do I want to call this? You know, this and that. I was like, you know what? Screw it. The car audio shop. Simple, you know, but you're right. They don't know everything we are capable of doing. But also, we would get calls all the goddamn time. Shit, still do. Hey, do you guys work on TVs? No. I can refer you to someone that we had help us like 10 years ago, but I'm not sure if they're still around. But no, cars.
Audio.
Yeah. I mean, and nothing against those people. I mean, they're just trying to get somebody to fix their TV and stuff. That's cool.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's like, come on. I mean, read a little. I mean, it's like the same people that can't read the road sign going down the road. I don't get it, but whatever.
It's just how people are nowadays. I'd have to say people are a little bit lazier, you know, to the point where, you know, some clients do their due diligence and do a little bit of research and educating themselves before giving you a call. You know, some don't, you know, some just, you know, are flipping through Google, getting phone numbers and just calling every single one of them. Yeah. And, you know, the biggest question we get asked, which is crazy, is where are you located? You know, and you try to give them one or two landmarks to make it easy. And then they're like, well, I don't know where that is. Or, I don't know where that is. And I'm like, all right, well, you can go to our website and just click on directions and it'll take you right here. Or you can Google us and hit the directions button right there underneath our shop name and it'll give you directions right here. What else is what's the next closest road? You know, I'm like, maybe you don't need a remote starter. Maybe you need a CarPlay and Google Maps and a new GPS for the car. You know, like it's silly that people almost take the hard route sometimes when there's a much easier route to get from point A to point B. You know, so instead of me giving you 15 landmarks and which way the wind blows by my shop, you know, we can, if you want, I'll email you a link that'll give you a link directly to our directions and directions page and how to get here.
I love it. Remember, they don't have email.
No.
I get one of those every once in a while. It's like, are you kidding me? I mean, that's cool. I get it, but seriously? Okay.
No old Juno account hanging out there anywhere?
Yeah. I'm old as hell and I still got a Hotmail account. I mean, at least something. I can at least figure this out.
Yeah. Email's probably, I'd say, a good 60 to 75% of our communication with our clientele is email based. You know, we don't, being a sole proprietor, I don't have a whole lot of time during the day to have a 45-minute conversation on the phone. So a lot of emails happen after hours or pre-hours before the shop opens to land those expectations or proposals or whatever we got to get done. email is still the most efficient way, but you know, we do a lot of SMS and text messaging as well. We do it for our scheduling and our appointments and appointment reminders. And SMS is getting better and better in terms of communication. That's why we offer a business cell phone to our clients as well. You know, some people, to your core, don't have email or have difficulty being able to take a photo of something and then attach it to an email to send to you. You know, but a lot of people can text a photo. So giving them the ability, you know, like if they're 30 minutes or 40 minutes away from your shop or location, you know, to be able to take a couple quick photos with their phone and then text them to you versus them battle through traffic down here and battle through traffic home for you to do a quick 10-minute kind of look over on their car, what they're talking about, goes a long way.
I think this is a key point that I think everybody needs to listen to right now, especially being what we talk about on this program a little bit. Meeting the clients on where they communicate with you, whether it's email, whether it's a phone call, whether it's text, whether it is being able to meet those clients on where they communicate with you, as Adam just said, is spectacular. Make it as easy as you can for them so that you can work with them correctly. I think that is spot on. I mean, we try to do the same thing here. I know a lot of people that do, and I think that is exactly the way to do it. So,
yep. Yeah, you give them a lot of different avenues to be able to communicate with you, you know, because the kids want text messages, you know, the older folk want email, you know, some people don't want either and want a phone call. Some don't want any of the above and prefer an in-person consultation. So it really depends on the client. I favor a lot of in-person consultations, especially depending on the job. I am not the ballpark guy. I'm not going to give you a ballpark figure, you know, and the people that ask for it, you know, are either not serious or just trying to price shop you, which is not a bad thing. That means they're educating themselves, but I'm not going to give you a ballpark without seeing the vehicle. And the reason being is you don't have, unless that thing just rolled off the dealer's lot, you have no idea kind of what's hiding behind those panels. And if they're an enthusiast of any Accord, you know, they could have already had a plethora of work done. And where you know, try to give them that ballpark, and then you go in there and you finally see the vehicle, and it's been to 7 other shops before you, and it's just a rat's nest everywhere you go, you know, that ballpark number is going to change. And it's the equivalent of a GC or general contractor coming into your house trying to give you a proposal on a renovation on your home, and they pull the plaster and lathe down or sheetrock down and find old knob and tube wire. You know what? That's not up to code. They can't just put the drywall back and forget they saw it. You know,
it doesn't work that way. Yeah,
it doesn't work that way. You know, and that's kind of what it is in our industry as well. And if you're dropping a panel and you're seeing something that's subpar, and you're not educating the client on what you found and what it's going to take to rectify that for them, then you're doing them a disservice, you know, by just looking past it or stepping over it. It's that stepping over that piece of trash on the floor.
Absolutely.
You know, if I pull apart those panels and whoever they went to before, I'm not trying to bash wherever you had your work done, but, you know, is it fused? Is it terminated properly? You know, if those things aren't met, you know, and I can see potential pitfalls or issues going down the road, and I can rectify that in 30 minutes for them by cleaning up the connections, and it's a half hour custom labor, then absolutely capitalize on what's there. And not only is it going to win you their trust and admiration for it, but it's going to potentially stop them from having a disappointing installation 3 months down the line, which gives our industry once again a bad name. You know, oh, I've only had this stuff in here for 6 months and it already doesn't.
Yeah,
you
know, absolutely.
I mean, it's an install fail versus a product fail. You know, so taking care of those clients, now you're their smart friend that found something for them, didn't really charge them an arm and a leg to rectify it, maybe in that circumstance, and some it may be more costly, but you know, that's additional revenue for the shop, and now you've just earned that client's trust for life. And they're like, all right, wow, he told me about that and showed me and rectified it. You know, even if it's something small and it's something you don't charge him for and rectify it in under 5 minutes, tell him and show him and let him know what you found. And now they're going to instantly going to be that client for life where they're like, I'm not going anywhere else. We have a client like that who won't. He drives from the East Coast of Florida over here for something as small as even a dash camera now, from us doing his radar and laser. He won't let anybody else touch his car. So even a, you know, $400 or $500 front and rear dash cam, he's driving 3 hours over here to the West Coast to have us do something that probably could be done at any local shop. But he values the work and pride we put in and will make that commute just to have us touch it.
That's that brand building.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, man. We're pushing a little over 2 hours, 2.5 hours. This is going to be two episodes, I'm sure. So what we're going to do is, Adam, we're going to give you a second here. Where can everybody find you? Where can they find Divine Concepts? Where's everything at, brother?
So our website, you can go to divine-concepts.com, and that's D-E-V-I-N-E. We get it spelled wrong all the time. It happens a lot, actually. We've even received a couple of recognition and awards from places that will remain nameless that even spelled it wrong on the awards, but it happens. We're on pretty much every platform for social media, whether it be Facebook, we're at Divine Concepts FL, Instagram, Divine Concept. We just started doing TikTok for Divine
Which Concepts. Which are badass, by the way. Check out those videos.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a cool, quicker platform to really expose your brand. And, you know, Instagram and Facebook, you know, we had talks about it at this last Dallas Knowledge Fest that they're kind of getting antiquated. Facebook's the dinosaur of the social media platforms. It's for a lot of us older crowd, but you can be a lot more tangible in your write-up and your review on Facebook, where a lot of the newer generation wants the TikTok or the Snapchat or just something quick, a reel that they can see highlights of your work where they don't really have to read anything, but, you know, are visual and auditory learners on what you do by those quick little 10-second clips. Where, you know, Facebook and Instagram, I think you have to be a little bit more on point on hashtagging and tagging whatever you're posting content are appropriately to reach the demographic or audience that you want. TikTok and those newer social media platforms kind of do that for you. And it's based off of who's viewing it, and then they'll share it with more people. So we've seen a pretty good response off of the TikTok, and we've only had it for maybe a couple weeks. But that's definitely a thing that we need to work on as a business, is our social media branding. It takes a lot of time.
You and me both.
We have enough content. Yeah, we have enough content on our phone and cameras to probably do 2 to 3 build photos a day for 7 months and not run out of content. So I've got it all saved. It's just the time for putting it up there, which, once again, you know, using time as an excuse, you know, it's on me to make the time. And that's something I got to either get better at or delegate it and actually find maybe a guy or girl at the local college campus that wants to be a social media manager and kind of market our brand.
So with that said, Adam is hiring. I'm hiring. Of course, we're all fucking hiring. But just so everybody's aware, yes, we need some salesmen. We need some techs. And I don't want to jump into all that stuff. But yes, we are definitely looking and having all sorts of fun with that. So if you jump into this and happen to see it, I'll just throw that out there. Absolutely. But so I'm going to throw one last thing into here to kind of wrap this up, brother. Are you doing, you're doing Knowledge Fest in Las Vegas?
Absolutely.
100%. And you doing Brian's Badass Trainings in March? Are you doing that?
Yep, absolutely. I already got my ticket.
Awesome.
I'm ready to rock and roll for both of those. So February and March are going to be extremely exciting. I'm looking forward to K-Fest Vegas. I think the turnout's going to be phenomenal. I think it was a great idea from Cook and the MEA group to really facilitate it so that way it is a full year's worth of work to, you know, gain that award versus being a middle of the year or three quarters through a year. I think Vegas is going to be an awesome venue for that. And then Brian and his team with the expo is going to be absolutely insane.
That's going to be nuts, man. Both of them are going to be awesome, but yeah.
They're both going to be absolutely phenomenal. And I can't wait for February, March. Let's put it this way. I cannot wait for both of those events. That's going to, every time I go to any one of those events, it just rejuvenates me. You know, after 21 years, I tell clients this all the time. I nerd out. I geek out. I can't stop talking. I got a gifted gab. I'm an Irishman. But, you know, every time I go to one of those, I come back inspired, pumped up, you know, motivated, ready to hit it hard and adapt and change to whatever I saw transpire in the industry that I need to become the forefront on.
It's really amazing to go to these things and you're like here in your space and whatever. And you're like, all right, we're kicking ass. We're doing okay. You know, you get motivated and you're fucking doing shit and kind of wears down. Then all of a sudden you're like, go and see some of these and like, all right, motherfuckers, now we're going to kick some ass.
Yep.
Now I've seen this. Yep. Now we're really going to do something. And that's a whole nother episode, which we're going to do. And you're going to be back, I hope.
Oh, definitely. I would love to come back. I've had a blast on here and you know, you're spot on your statements. You know, like, I don't think I've known anybody who's gone to one of Brian's classes that hasn't come back and holistically used that outside perspective and filter and looked at their own shop or their fab room or whatever and go, this place is an effing mess. You know, after going to the surgical suite at Mobile Solutions, you know, they realize there is a better way to do it. And
I tell you what, let's just do something real quick. And I know Matt and Gary have their own podcasts and stuff. So I tell you what, we're trying to do something different here. I definitely am not trying to impede on their territory. So let's just make sure this is said right now. But also let's give a shout out for Matt and Gary for their podcast, which is badass. They have some awesome people on there and the way they go through things with their everything on there, which by the way, that is the check those guys out if you're into car audio and stuff like that, but also the Mobile Solutions and those guys, that whole crew is badass. And that's what we're talking about. Just so you know, check it out. Mobile Solutions underscore USA, if I remember correctly, but yeah, they do some badass stuff. They have some amazing tools and stuff, but beyond that, sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent here for a second, but you know, there's a whole lot of things in this industry that are really out there for people to go and find, and whether it's just and us in the 12 volt industry or some things that could help. I know Brian teaches at you know, SEMA and different classes and different things that will help other people in other automotive categories as well, which I think is awesome.
Sure.
And he has a lot of guys in there that do upholstery and do different things, which we didn't even jump into. You taught yourself upholstery and everything else. We'll jump into that on the next episode that I have you on. But yeah, man, there's a whole plethora of things, and that's the whole point of this podcast. You know, there's a whole shit ton of things to get out there and learn. And this is why I wanted Adam on here so much, is because he has really put in the effort and the time. He's went out and taught himself up. Again, I just said upholstery. He's learning 3D printing. He's learning all this different stuff and putting things in. Hell, I'm jealous. And, you know, dude's kicking ass. He's been in business since 2018 and he's got numerous awards. He's been killing it. And man, I am so fucking stoked to have you on the show. I mean, you have no idea. I was really looking forward to this. I have a ton of great guests and you are definitely one of, we're just starting this out. We're going to keep kicking ass, but man, you are one of them that has literally just jumped in and fucking killed it. So man,
I'm proud to be on here, brother. I'm proud. You know, me and you always have a great time no matter where we're at, whether it's Orlando, Dallas, Vegas, you know, we always have a good time and we're very like-minded individuals. So, it's easy, and completely natural, you know, just sitting here shooting the shit, talking about what we absolutely love to do.
Well, man, I appreciate so much. I'm going to kill this recording here in a sec, and this will probably be a couple episodes because, well, usually you try to keep them to about an hour or so, and well, we're pushing a little over two, so we'll figure it out on the backside. I don't need to worry about that. But anyway, thank you very much, man, for being on here. I'm gonna kill this recording and I'll chat with you for a second, and yeah, you're definitely gonna be back as long as you're up for it. We're gonna have some fun.
Absolutely.
We're going to have some fun in Vegas. We're going to have some fun in Arizona. Hang out. Yep. Have a good time. And I'm going to come down and see you in Florida.
Whenever you're ready, brother.
All right.
Thank you for tuning into the Business Cars and Cigars podcast. Make sure to share this with someone you know that can benefit from this content. Remember to support this show by rating, reviewing, and subscribing.